Ralph Rasch has suggested that the expression du chapelle indicates that this pavane and gaillard are arrangements of ensemble pieces. If so, they share this feature with most of Phillips's keyboard music. Of course, the intabulations attributed to Phillips have a far more florid style that makes them brilliant showpieces. But what do we mean when we attach Phillips's name to such settings? Is it only the level of virtuosity or the choice of ornamental figures that distinguishes these from arrangements by his contemporaries? Are there other aspects of style that we can identify in his authenticated intabulations and look for in anonymous ones? It's not hard to find recurring features in Phillips's intabulations. For example, most incorporate figuration in triplets for a single, relatively brief passage, usually toward the end of a piece or a section. Triplets occur as a sort of climax toward the end of many Elizabethan and Dutch pieces, including the Fantasia that I played a few moments ago. But in Phillips's transcriptions of vocal music, they may also have something to do with the rhetoric of the original chanson or madrigal. For instance, triplets occur at about the same point in both of his settings of Strigo's madrigal, Chi farà fede. As you can see in example 8, the triplets coincide more or less with line 9 of the original poem, containing the words, e grida per le selve, he cries out through the forest. In line 10, we hear the actual cry ringing through the woods, ai dura sorte, ah, harsh fate. This is the climax of the madrigal, emotionally and musically, and here in both intabulations, the decoration begins to accelerate. Another feature of Phillips's intabulations is the occasional introduction of imitation involving motives in eighth notes, as opposed to the sixteenths of the divisions or embellishments that are added elsewhere. These imitative passages typically occur in a phrase that marks the beginning of a new section. An example occurs in the setting of Morenzio's madrigal, Detto dunque partire. The imitative passage in the second system of example 9 corresponds with a new sentence in the original, I che partir por Deggio, ah, but since I must leave. This phrase marks a low point in terms of pacing or energy level within the work. The preceding passage, also left relatively plain in Phillips's setting, contains a rare instance of text painting. Dissonances, unusually harsh for Phillips, correspond with the word martire, suffering, in the original poem. These two phrases constitute a lull at the center of this first part, prima parte, of the madrigal, whose outer sections in Phillips's setting each comprise a skillfully calibrated crescendo of increasingly lively but constantly varied embellishment. The first section, corresponding with lines 1 through 4 of the poem, reaches its climax at a point corresponding with the exclamation oi me in line 3. This can be seen in example 10a. Example 10b shows the climax or peak in the following section with the outcry ai in the repetition of line 5. Now, apart from exclamations such as oi me and ai, text painting is not a major concern in Phillips's settings, nor in the stylistically conservative madrigals and chansons on which they are based. In such compositions, as in his own vocal polyphony, musical rhetoric is less a matter of text painting than of attention to the syntax and structure of the poem. One way to reflect such things musically is through the relative weight of the pauses and articulations between poetic lines and sentences. At these points, Phillips's transcriptions sometimes leave cadences plain. In other cases, they add figuration to connect the adjacent phrases. At the opening of Morenzio's madrigal Tirsi, shown in example 11a, the two upper parts, singing alone, come to a full stop after stating the first three words, Tirsi morir volea. Tirsi wished to die. Example 11b shows another such break, marking a change of voice near the end of part 2. Here the unnamed nymph tells Tirsi, "Mori, cor mio, ch'io moro, die my heart, for I am dying." And the poem continues, "Le rispose il pastore," the shepherd replied to her. Phillips leaves both these articulations empty, retaining the break between the respective phrases. But a previous pause in the original madrigal is filled with arpeggiation in the transcription, for there is no change of voice when the nymph first sentia I messi d'amore, senses the messengers of love, a wonderful euphemism, and then dice con occhi languidi, speaks with languid eyes, all of that in example 12. At the end of the first system of example 12, a duet for the upper voices again concludes in a bare unison. But now Phillips seems intent on expressing the lover's surging passion. The divisions continue up to a sudden chromatic step, three measures before the end of the example. This introduces the nymph's trembling words in the following line. Now, no one questions Phillips's authorship of this setting. Could we use the type of analysis that I have just tried to demonstrate in order to judge a contested attribution? An anonymous setting of Morenzio's madrigal Ecco l'Aurora is preserved uniquely in the manuscript known as Linar A1 or LY. This is a major source for works of Sweelinck and Phillips. There, the setting in question is preceded by an equally anonymous setting of Strigio's Che Faro Fede, which Tregean attributed to Phillips. David Smith has included the anonymous transcription of Ecco l'Aurora in his edition of Phillips's keyboard music. He argues, and I quote, that some bars show a stylistic affinity to other keyboard works by Phillips. I don't deny that, yet style is more than the choice of individual decorative figures. The first half of this setting, treating lines 1 through 4 of the poem, is far less florid than usual with Phillips. This reflects the unusual structure of Morenzio's original madrigal, which sets a single stanza of ottava rima by Vincenzo Querino. The music of the first 4 lines is simply repeated for the next 4. By concentrating decoration in the second half, the arranger of the keyboard version in effect creates a variation form. The peculiar design of this setting might constitute an interpretation of the poem, whose form and content Morenzio's madrigal rather disregards. The last 2 lines form a rhyming couplet, which in Quirino's poem makes a sudden volta or change of character at the words "et il por piango," "but I, however, weep." Morenzio's music reflects neither this nor a change of topic 2 lines earlier, when the subject shifts from dawn, ecco l'aurora, to night, ecco la notte. Possibly the keyboard version underlines this change of subject by introducing significant decoration only at that point, that is at line 5. Perhaps too, the keyboard version points out the volta in the final couplet, shown in example 13. The intabulation marks the new idea in the poem through little imitations in eighth notes, then grows more animated after a chromatic progression at the word piango. Such things are familiar features of Phillips's settings, yet I'm troubled by a few points. First, the forms of both the model by Morenzio and the keyboard setting would be unique among Phillips's surviving works, and the lack of decoration in the first half of the transcription seems out of character for him. His intabulation of Caccini's Amarilli, which we heard last night, is another sort of bipartite or binary form, but there even the first statement of each repeated half receives significant embellishment. The latter half of the present piece contains some brilliant figuration, yet I miss here the variety of rhythm and figuration that characterizes Phillips's best intabulations. There are no triplets at all, although this is also true of Amarilli. I'd like to play this piece for you. Since most of you are probably unfamiliar with the original madrigal, I invite you to follow the compressed score that I've included toward the end of your handout, which also contains an English version of the text.